You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Kia ora, Russell. How are you?
Kia ora, not bad. Yeah, it's been a big few days, I have to say.
Yeah, it has. Thank you so much for joining us to chat about the exceptional person that was Doug Hood and all of his contributions to Aotearoa music. It's been a really sad week to lose Doug, but I think it's really important that we spend a bit of time on the show today listening to some of the songs that he was a part of. He, correct me if I miss anything out, but he was an incredible manager, producer, sound engineer, touring agent. He did a lot for Aotearoa music.
He did a lot, and it was kind of it was a life of working out what needed to be done and finding a way to do it. And he did it at a time when no one knew how anything worked. You know, the early Flying Mondays were quite distant from the established record industry. It was kind of a rejection of that. And Doug was just the guy who was there and worked out how to do it and did it. Right back. That story starts, you know, he grew up in Te Kuiti, left home at 17, mid-17s, he's in Dunedin working as a post office technician when his wacky friend Chris Knox decides he wants to form a punk rock-inspired band called The Enemy, who really did change things. You know, they didn't actually make a formal recording, but they started a lot. And so what does Doug do but leverages his post office training to assemble and learn how to operate a PA system so the band could play through it. And then he looked after the money and then he drove the band's van. And the rest of his life was kind of like that.
Wow. I mean, just amazing to bring all of those skills to the table in terms of organization and admin that is often kind of missing from that music space, especially back then, I imagine, but still do it in such a personable and intimate kind of way and still have those strong friendships, eh?
Yeah, the word people have been using about Doug is kind. He was kind and level-headed. And that was a valuable thing to have. And it was kind of a good fall for Chris Knox. They were friends for, you know, nearly 50 years, I think. And Chris was wild and brilliant and would do crazy things. And Doug wasn't averse to mischief, but he would be the one that would make it work, basically. So The Enemy played, came up to Auckland, blew people away here, and then morphed into a band called Toy Love, who were interesting because they were actually only together for 20 months. And yet they made this massive impression. They actually got records in the charts, and they weren't really a punk band like The Enemy. They played sort of psychedelic pop music and all kinds of weird stuff. And they had, and this is a really pivotal thing in the whole Flying Nun story, they headed for Australia and thought, we'll go there and make it bigger, and they hated it. They hated being part of that pub rock industry, and they made an album and hated that experience because they felt they lost control.
Mm.
So what happens then is they come back and Chris Knox, who's the singer, he inherits a little bit of money from an aunt, and he bought a four-track reel-to-reel recorder, the legendary four-track TAC. It was Chris's tape recorder. He had the aesthetic input, but right from the beginning, it was Doug employing the skills he'd taught himself mixing live bands at the controls. And you can hear Doug right through the culture from that point on in recordings.
Wow, amazing.
Is it too soon for a song?
No, let's do it. Let's have a song.
Okay. This is from the first Toy Dwarfs EP, three songs, called Nothing's Gonna Happen. And this was the first record that they made on the TAC 4-track. And Doug's not credited on it, but he was there and he was at the controls. And oddly enough, it's not on Flying Nun, it's on Furtive, which was an earlier independent label owned by Simon Gregg and Paul Rose. And it is a hell of a record. And it's so different than anything made in a big studio, and it sounds so much better.
Cool, let's have a listen.
All the ants in the world will sip sweetly at the trough of tea, and almost say one word for anything but what they've learned from all the young coats. Race horses laugh so hopeful, stiff bricks in the general direction. I'm anywhere but home. Nothing's gonna happen. Maybe all the children in small rooms will fall silent at a wall or window and forget to breathe for just 1 minute because of some beauty that has not been altered. Damn, or pointed out by the clumsy dark oafs who train them. Nothing's gonna happen. 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 Then again, all the time, every minute, never ending, unrelenting, all around us, without pausing, endless, endless, all pervading, moving motion, this way, that way, that way, our way, tick tock, free fall, love, love, kiss, kiss, make, do, be, is, was, I, me, be, see, be, e, f, g, h, I think nothing's gonna happen. Silent in a wall or window, I began to breathe for just 1 minute because of some beauty that has not been altered and or pointed out. That a clumsy dog won't train them. Nothing's gonna happen. Nothing's gonna happen. Nothing's gonna happen.
This is The Tall Dwarfs with Nothing's Gonna Happen. We're currently chatting to Russell Brown about the legendary Doug Hood, who very sadly passed away last week. This is a beautiful track.
It is. It is. It's a remarkable record, actually. We tend to forget it because it's not part of the Flying Nun catalogue. It was later on. But it's such a statement against what they'd been doing at Twilight. Which didn't end well. So they had a bad time in Australia. They didn't like the record they'd made. So they break up. They land back in Auckland. Christmas partner Barbara having a baby. Bud goes and stays with a band called the Androids, who were just an absolute trouble magnet, and headed back to Te Kuiti after KC smashed most of the windows in the house and ransacked it, and God knows what was going on there. And then he came back and talked himself into a job with a company called Live Sound, who provided most of the PAs in town. There were two companies that did it, and Live Sound was one of them. And most of the time, he was looking after the house PA and mixing bands at the Windsor Castle in Parnell. And Parnell wasn't like it is now. There was still a little freak going on in Parnell then.
A bit more exciting back then, maybe.
Oh, hell yes. And the Windsor Castle became the place where all these fine young men who were forming and getting on their feet and wanting to tour to Auckland, they would come and play at the Windsor Castle. Partly because Doug was there, and he was really good with them. He taught them how to look after the gear. Doug would always tell you how to roll a cable. So, you know, that was again, another thing he just taught himself to do. And he eventually started booking the Windsor Castle as well. So it became a real stronghold of that culture. And, you know, on old sales around then, it was not unknown for us to, like, bands would come up and play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it was not unknown for us to go every night. Which was kind of wild, but on the other hand, there was less excitement to be had elsewhere. TV shut down quite early on, even at the weekend, and also the pubs closed at 10 on weeknights, so that was quite good. You could get home and see the late news and have a cup of tea. So I think live music was the centre of a lot of people's lives back then, and at the centre of that was Doug. And the other thing that happened at Live Sound was that he got to work with a guy called Paul Crowther, who was the original Split Enz drummer, who later became a sound man and designer of the Hotcake pedal, which is this guitar pedal that that touring musicians from overseas would come to New Zealand, and the thing they would do would be to go and find Paul Crowther and buy a Hotcake. So Doug told me he regarded Paul as a real mentor, you know, that someone who actually was also a nice guy and understood sound, basically.
Cool. We have a song from the Androids up next. Yeah, you mentioned before that.
Yeah, let's play the song from the Androids. It's another non-Flying Nun release. They were this band of absolute rascals from Christchurch, I used to see them when I was growing up there, and it was always a party. There's quite a good story about them coming back down from Auckland and playing at the Gladstone down there, and Jim Wilson, who is now Phantom Bill Stickers, told me that the manager of the pub came up to him and said, "Jim, this is during an Androids gig that sold out. Jim, there are people having sex down by the stage."
Oh dear.
And Jim's like, "Oh God, oh Ray, I'm so sorry. And Ray Newman, the manager, was this nuggety little ex-boxer, that says, "Oh no, when can I book them again?"
Funny. So, well, fittingly, this song is actually called Getting Jumpy, isn't it?
Getting Jumpy, yeah.
Just because.
definitely sounds like that would have caused a little bit of ruckus back in the day. That's the androids getting jumpy.
Absolutely notorious. Meanwhile, while this is happening, the Flying Nun thing is starting to get up on its feet, and the Clean were the great early Flying Nun band, had made one record, Tally-ho, in a studio in Christchurch that didn't sound like they wanted it to, and so it was decided that the next record they made would be made on the TAC 4-track, and Doug and Chris would be there. And that was actually made in a ramshackle, the Legion of Frontiersmen's Hall in Bond Street, which is this weird little building that's still there. And it's just a weird little wooden building, and it's got this incredible musical history. But before they used it to record, Split Ends used to practice there, and various other bands have, but they decided this is where they were going to record it. And they made Boodle, 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 the second Clean record, which is a 5-track EP, and it is an absolute breakthrough. And I've actually made the label. It just kept selling. And it eventually went gold, I think. And that was when most of the revenue came in that allowed Flying Nun to record other bands and actually get the records into shops. So the Clean did everyone else a big, big favour. And that was really Doug's ear that made that work. And that eventually gave rise to what was called in America the lo-fi movement. And they regard Chris Knox as the father of that movement. He always called it low-tech, and he's probably at a point, because these records actually do sound really, really good. They sound really direct. I was going to play a track off that called Point That Thing Somewhere Else, which BFM listeners will know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was played at his funeral. I've talked about it. I've played it so much. But I thought we'd actually play a different Clean record, which is their last one before they broke up. They did get back together later on. It's the last one that Doug engineered. And it's kind of cynical. We could play that if you like.
Getting Older?
Getting Older by the Clean. We'll be right back.
This is The Clean with Getting Older. You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM. We're talking to Russell Brown about the legendary life of Doug Hood. Do you think through all of this, when people like The Clean were blowing up, do you think that Doug was getting his flowers as a person, supposedly kind of behind the scenes?
I don't think for the public. The public maybe didn't know so much about them. Although I was talking to a friend of mine who used to go to gigs, and they'd get really excited if Doug was behind the desk, since they knew it was going to be good. He was kind of a star in himself, maybe not to the wider public, but he was at the centre of just about everything. If something needed doing, Doug would do it. After the Birdle sessions in Auckland, the TAC went on tour, and there was another project called the Dunedin Double EP, which was the recording debut of the Chills, the Belaines, Sneaky Feelings and the Stones. The first time any of those bands had been, it wasn't a studio, it was Paul King to all those bass players' house in Christchurch. But it was a continuation of this idea of simple direct recordings in natural spaces, where the instruments themselves sounded good live. And you know, it really made a difference. I mean, it's not a perfect record, the Dunedin Double, but it carries on this tradition that was being established of these very simple low tech recordings that still sound really good. Then in 1982, three of those bands happened to be in Auckland on the same weekend. Again, this was a thing that Doug had organised. And he took them into the Chills, the Belaines, and Sneaky Feelings, took them into a new studio called The Lab. And one weekend, they made the Chills Pink Frost, the Belaines Death and the Maiden, and Sneaky Feelings Be My Friend, which is extraordinary.
Yeah.
That could happen. And again, Doug wasn't just arranging it was his ear. You know, he was just always there doing the right thing. Gradually, he moved into management, which is where the big gap was really back then. Now in the New Zealand music industry, you have people who do have management skills. They have people to learn from. They have people to apprentice for. But because it was such a break from the established music industry, those skills were really scarce. And again, it was a matter of teaching himself to do it.
It also feels like potentially there was like a bit of a cultural attitude against the idea of like formal management in a way.
Yeah, there was. Against sort of overt commercialism, for sure.
Yeah.
Most of my musician friends now are delighted if they can write something they can sell for an advertising campaign. That's how you eat. But that would have horrified people back then, I think, as well. And again, Doug sort of stepped into the breach there, and he organised these package tours, like the Looney Tour, where you had a bunch of bands with the length of the country and played university orientations. And you know, all these really memorable things. You look at it and you find that Doug was there. And he also became the manager of Chills. And that wasn't the start of his friendship with Martin Phillips, but it was a really key time. And the two of them were still exchanging messages, you know, up until Martin died a month ago. And I think it really broke Doug that Martin died, you know, because Doug wasn't well, and he knew he didn't have long. And I think he had the idea of Martin playing at his funeral, so that was sad that couldn't happen. But when the Chills took off and became the first flying nun band to venture outside New Zealand and went to the UK in 1985, Doug was their manager. And yeah, I can't really think of anyone else who could have done it at the time. Now you've got a choice, but not then. We're rushing through the tracks too quickly, but anyway, I'm going to do it.
No, we're good.
Okay, let's go back to those lab sessions and that one weekend in 1982. And one of the three bands that made a record was the Belaines, where Graham Downs was a songwriter, and they recorded Death and the Maiden, which is, you know, one of the Flying Nun classics. So let's have a listen to Death and the Maiden by the Belaines.
That is the Verlaines with Death and the Maiden. Absolute banger of a track, that one.
So, shall we pick up again in 1982? Because another interesting thing happened that year. There was a call to the house where Doug and Chris and their partners were living in Ponsonby, and it was someone from Australia who wanted to tour the Fall. And no one had ever toured overseas bands before. They didn't really know how to do it, but of course Doug stepped up and did it. So that became pretty legendary. That was the Fall's first time here. And through the relationship with the Australian promoters, Ken Lees and Vivian West, Doug got confident enough to form his own touring company, which was Loony Tours. The original idea was that it was going to be Tally-ho Tours, as a nod to the Queen's first single, but there was a potential branding clash with a caravan company, so it was Loony Tours. And that was an extraordinary time, because Loony Tours brought the Violent Femmes, Billy Bragg, New Order, John Cale, Nico, all these legendary artists who kind of chimed with the music being made here, who'd never been here before. And it was really a hell of a time to be alive and old enough to get into the pub. Because, yeah, it was remarkable to be able to go and see these bands. And it was kind of funny, because Doug would go and pick them up in his crappy car and then just take them back to his house.
Kiwi, totally Kiwi.
He was very proud of having managed to convert the Violent Femmes into one-day cricket fans.
Epic.
And there was a sequel to that era, because Doug kept on being a promoter, and that relationship with Lees and West took a step up when Doug became the first Big Day Out promoter in New Zealand in 1994. So that was a whole other generation that had these great live music experiences thanks to Doug Hood. And, you know, it's nice for people to remember that this thing didn't exist until he did it.
It's crazy to think that one person can be so pioneering in just how our music industry is kind of structured now, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. And it wouldn't happen now because people would be more specialised. But back then, things needed doing and he worked out how to do them, basically. And he actually toured, he toured stadium level artists as well, you know, Tina Turner and the likes of that. One thing he was really proud of was he toured the Seekers, who I don't know if you know, they were a nice soft rock, you know, vocal group from the 1960s that his parents liked and Doug's parents did. And that was one of his proudest moments, was being able to introduce his parents to the Seekers backstage at the Founders Theatre in Hamilton.
Oh, that's very
cool. That was really nice for him. Apparently the tour he hated most was the Proclaimers. I've never quite found out why, but he did not like it. So he carried on doing that, but let's face it, he got into some tax trouble. He didn't quite have quite the attention to the accounts that he had in his earlier days. And he eventually ended up leaving not just the Big Day Out, but by the time the 20th century rolled around, he was out of the industry and working for as a tenancy manager for Housing New Zealand. And he really cared about those tenants. But there's another really interesting thing about Doug, and I talked about it at his funeral. Most people didn't know he was Māori. Because he, nowadays, if you've been to a New Zealand music industry event, people will just stand up and give their pepeha. No one did that back then. And Doug was part of a generation who lost their heritage because it was considered better not to talk about it. And it's actually, it's quite a heritage. Doug, through his mother, Dulcie Flannel, is Ngāpuhi. And when I was writing his eulogy, I realised there was this extraordinary synergy because in the midst of all these other things we're talking about, just after Boodle, 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 Doug was roped into work on the soundtrack of a film called Te Rerenga Waigua, which was being made with a group of people on a job scheme by an animator called Joe Wiley. So Joe got, and it is of course, it was a bunch of mostly Pākehā filmmakers trying to render the great Māori mythology of what happens when we die. And Doug got roped in it, and his involvement was actually much greater than the simple credit he got, because he was out doing recording ambient sounds because the sound libraries weren't good enough. So he's out recording cicadas and passing buses and produced Chris Knox's music for the soundtrack. But they didn't know what to do with the climactic scene where the spirits of the dead take leave of Kaipiringa and go into the world of the dead. And it's quite a psychedelic scene. And Doug said, well, how about an instrumental mix of Point That Finger by The Clean, which, of course, he'd helped produce. And he had multi tracks. So that's what it became. And the weird thing was, at the time, because there was actually some pushback, mostly from very right-wing Pākehā, never from Māori, that here's these white guys telling a Māori story. Well, no one realised at the time that there was actually a son of Ngāpuhi in there, bringing his culture he was creating back to his own rohe. That film had a huge impression on a lot of people, and me included. And then, many years later, when I was on the trust board that launched NZ On Screen, I described this film. I couldn't remember the name of it, but I knew who'd made it, and I asked whether it could be tracked down and put up on the NZ On Screen website, and eventually it was. And that brought out a whole lot more of the story, including Doug's involvement. But it is kind of remarkable that there in the middle of it is this Ngāpuhi kid. And, of course, that land is sacred to that Ngāpuhi. You can go and see it. Te Rerenga Waigua, on NZ On Screen. It's an amazing animated short, and just go and see it and marvel at the way the Clean music was used in that.
Beautiful. We're going to finish with a song. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Children's Hour and Looking for the Sun?
Yeah, Children's Hour subsequently became The Headless Chickens. And partly through Doug's doing, they won the Ronnie Rock Award and made an album as The Headless Chickens. And then the album after that was Body Blow, which was a huge pop hit. And the mainstream had heard of them. There was some outrage when they won. Doug was on the judging panel. again, there's Doug right in the middle of things. But he and Chris Knox kind of founded Progressive Studios. They were using one of the rooms to rehearse. And they didn't really have much of a connection to that Flying Nun scene. And they walk in and go, well, this is a hell of a noise. Who are you? And so they end up making this record. And again, Doug's there engineering. And this is the last track on the EP. It's a song about accidentally getting out of your head. And it's intense.
Good to end on an intense note for an intense career, I think.
Indeed.
Thank you so much, Russell, for chatting with us today. It's been just beautiful to learn more about the amazing and expansive life of Doug Hood.
Lovely. And I'm only doing it for BFM.
Ka kite.
Ka kite. Bye-bye.
That was
Audio Culture on 95 BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just fascination.